Hi guys, welcome back to this week's episode of Millennial Mirrors, a discussion on millennial life in the Middle East. So this week's episode is titled Sex and Relationship Education. It's a touchy subject, so disclaimer here, if you're offended by this topic or if you just don't want to listen to any kind of conversation about this topic, please feel free to stop the episode now. My guest for this episode is Rozan Albenawi. And we talk about things like building trust with your children in order to be able to have open and honest conversations with them when it comes to these topics, as well as how, as an adult, you can go on a journey of self-discovery and educate yourself about these subjects as well. I hope you enjoy this episode. It was an interesting one to record, and I'm so thankful to Rozana for actually coming on and being willing to, you know, go on the record and to discuss these topics. So listen in, and I hope you enjoy it. This episode is sponsored by Carriage, a great app for ordering what you need in a super convenient way. With no minimum orders, you could literally just order a cup of coffee. Hi, Rozana. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm Shadi. Thanks for having me.
It's interesting. I'm recording now in Jeddah, so this is a very different experience for me.
Yeah, I'm also having a new experience in Jeddah.
Well, I'm glad I could give you a new experience in your own hometown. So can you tell the listeners a bit about yourself just before we jump into the topic?
So I'm Rozan Albenawi. I've been in the coaching arena for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. My background is in human relations and educational psychology. Recently, I've been facilitating Brené Brown's work, which is like a combination of Rising Strong, Daring Greatly, Dare to Lead, with different groups and
That's super cool. I love her work. Yeah.
Me too. And I believe in it. You know, it really affected the way I, you know, I show up and the way I process like all these emotions and things. Mm-hmm. So I really I really think it's great. The skills that she focuses on.
Okay, and so this episode is kind of about sex education and what falls under that. So can you kind of just introduce your experiences when it comes to that topic?
Okay, so just that question alone is like seven popping things are happening.
Well, let's start with your thesis. How about that? And then we can...
Okay, yeah. That's a great way to start. So I'll give a bit of context. So after I did my bachelor's, mm-hmm. I wanted to pursue my postgraduate studies.
Yes.
So I applied, and most universities wanted experience, you know, like teaching experience or something. So I taught psychology in an all-girls high school in Jeddah. Mm-hmm. And the... after the first elective, teaching intro to psychology, I felt like the girls were coming to me in the breaks, asking questions. There was a lot of curiosity about their own, you know, changes that were happening, you know, ages 14 to 17.
Right.
And sometimes I would listen to them, like, you know, about guys, about, like, very subtle. So they would come to me and I was like, okay, let me discuss with the principal if we can do, like, curriculum that can satisfy the curiosity part, but also have, like, science behind it, backed up by professional and, like, resources and things like that. So I called it premarital education. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I had them do really interesting things, like interview their parents, interview, like, couples they looked up to.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so when I went to do my human relations degree, I picked that experience and wanted to unravel how do we learn about SRE. And when I say SRE, it's the education way of saying sex and relationship, content or topics globally. And yeah, that's how it started. So, and then when I did after that leadership development also, there were like, so it kept on coming in different areas.
Right.
It's a very broad, yeah.
It's a very broad kind of topic, which I think people don't realize all the things that fall under sex and relation education.
Exactly.
So I guess in terms of the status of SRE in the region at the moment, how do you feel the status of it is?
So there's a lot of changes happening right now, and it's really an exciting time. I know there are... resources right now available in Arabic, based on science, based on research. So it's great to have these because they were needed and they were like part of the recommendations that I had in my thesis 9 years ago.
Right.
So a lot has changed, and that's great because parents now or people have the choice to go and, you know, speak to someone or ask or get info that can actually support their learning.
Right.
And it's a matter of fact, I think for يعني دحين كيف بقول إنه it goes back to people to get the knowledge right, and to kind of like...
You have to educate yourself.
And kind of like break that, the fear that, oh my God, like, what if I learn about this? What's going to change? How am I going to relate to my kids? How am I going to talk to them about it if I open this can of worms? So it's kind of like that.
Do you feel like fear is a big part of why people don't educate themselves about sex and relations?
Yes, fear of the unknown, fear of like uncertainty, risk again, and it's uncomfortable. There's discomfort. I think that's the main...
The discomfort.
Like, the discomfort. Right. And really like kind of like being in that awkwardness of like, oh, like it's not how, you know, we're used to talking about this topic, you know. Like any other taboo or stigmatized kind of topics. Now there is a change. Like even people are talking about openly about mental health.
Right.
They're talking about, you know, divinity, addiction. Like we're more accepting to these topics. But like, again, there's a huge gray area.
Of course.
That comes with SRE. And it depends on readiness levels. It depends on the school and what is being taught at the school. So, and the experiences of children, like growing up as a young girl in the States, I remember I was 6 and I came back to my parents and I remember that I had so much already that they had to do something with all this knowledge.
Of course, right.
So, and I came back to Saudi, I was 9 years old and I was already so like... I can give like a crash course to my peers in grade 3. And that's a good thing and a bad thing.
Right.
Because when you have like a student in the class or kids and some are advanced in their knowledge and others, it kind of puts the other parents under pressure.
Of course.
To kind of like...
So I guess what's your recommendation for that kind of situation as a parent if you get approached by your child who has questions because something happened in school?
It means like they're definitely ready and they've reached that readiness level and you really need to like start doing the work and breaking the ice. So kind of like getting curious about what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they, usually it starts with a story and a definition. So they would come up and they would say, oh, I heard that this and this and this. And the parent would say, oh, yeah, well, this part is right, but let's talk about this part. This isn't so correct. Because usually, like, 99% of the times, half of it is made up and completely wrong information. So the parents start to, first of all, very important to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a safe space and we can talk about whatever we need. And, you know, I'm not going to shame you or embarrass you or make it more awkward than it is.
Yeah.
And then they go into like what that kid knows and what the questions are. So I wouldn't follow a set curriculum.
Yeah.
I would basically process-based learning, depending on what's emerging.
And I think you said something very interesting, which is, please understand it's just as awkward for your child as it is for you. But at the end of the day, the onus is on you to manage that awkwardness because your child hasn't developed those skills necessarily.
Absolutely. And I was working as a school counselor after I returned with my master's in an elementary school. So I was managing grades 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so like, so children in this age, they're curious. They might act on certain urges. So they might show behaviors to other kids that are not appropriate. And then it's the role of the educators, teachers, parents to kind of like, start teaching boundaries and parameters.
Right.
But the problem is when other mothers start to bully and kind of tell their kids that don't speak to that girl or that boy because of what they did,
mm-hmm.
or start, that sends a message indirectly to the child that, you know, there's negative connotations to this act.
Yes.
And that's where the problem is because the children don't need to be directly told that this is
Because you're building in shame and you're building in all these kinds of things which are going to rear their head at a later stage when they're when they're grown up.
And it's really like normal because like, I don't know if we want to go into like the psychosexual stages, but like with like sex ed really starts from the very early stages, like when a baby is being, you know, changed their diaper, you know, and other kids are there and you're like, okay. And you start like, we start noticing like, what boundaries do I want to put in place? And then toddlers at age two start to self-discover and self-explore. And then that's when they start learning to talk. So once they're ready to speak, we kind of like say, okay, so this is, you know, these are the boundaries and you can explore, but like where and how and with whom and with not. So some parents think that, no, I'm going to delay it till, you know, when they're nine or eight. And it's already so late, especially now with social media.
Of course.
And the internet.
Yeah. So what are, you said there were some resources, there are more resources available now in Arabic. What are some of those resources that are available to parents who are looking for things?
So I know that there's a workshop online by Hiba Hariri. She's, she has a PhD in counseling psychology and child developmental psychology. And I've heard amazing feedback from parents. And even the impact of this learning experience is not just on them with their children, but even on their, like, on themselves as adults.
Right.
Because, you know, back in the day, many of, many didn't have the chance to really learn and have the right resources. So it impacts both, like, that, you know, relationship with the kids and also how they start to understand their own selves, their own sexuality, their own bodies and and relationships.
I guess, where are most people getting their information now?
Friends. So in my research, when I interviewed, it was a qualitative study. So, and it matched even Lizzie, she's a sex educator in Belgium, and also Hiba, like, we all found consensus that friends and peers and the internet are the main, you know, the first places where someone goes to learn. They ask a friend in school or they watch something on TV and they might Google after.
Right.
So they hear a term on one of the shows and then they're like, okay, that's interesting. I don't know that word. And they Google, right? And then you know what happens with Google.
And then you're just down the rabbit hole, basically, from
exactly.
there.
So if the parents are not aware or there isn't already, you know, conversations happening around these awkward topics, then children will not go up to their parents. They'll just find other ways to continue getting their education, which is really problematic because, again, it's not just about one angle in this huge realm of info. It's about attitudes, emotions, readiness for the future and future relationships, assumptions about this, expectations.
Right.
So much goes into it. In my thesis, we also had other sources, like I remember Cosmopolitan magazines in the summer, you know, people traveling. And even with that, like most of it is not scientifically, you know, correct. Or watching these shows, I remember like, you know, growing up, Sex and the City.
Yeah.
So many myths and misconceptions, right? And so, again, like, the media has a huge role. And, like, now there is awareness, all these campaigns about, you know, authenticity and the real, you know, side of things. But it's still...
But if that's the expectation that's been built in your head of what sexual relations are, then when you actually get there, you're going to discover things are very, very different.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so rare to have parents. Like, I was very, very, very lucky that my parents, when I was in the States and I came back and I started sharing stories, that they were accommodating. They answered all my questions. They brought me, like, things, that books that I can, like, look at together. And it continued since that day that I would never feel, you know, holding back from going. Like, I would just, you know, go and ask. But in the research, it's very rare that children have that.
Yeah.
It's really rare. And I was thinking, like, even with those kids who have that open channels with their parents, there is a lot of misconception. So, ma balak, or, like, with the ones who don't, like, it's it might be triple,
it's,
you know.
Even more scary, even more awkward. But I think that also can be even more dangerous because you then don't know what that child is going to get themselves into that they're not prepared for.
Exactly. And they wouldn't, like, I remember my son, I was so happy. He came to me, actually, both of my kids, and they told me when things were they felt unsafe. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy that they came and told me because, first of all, it breaks the shame. And second of all, they trust me to help them. Mm-hmm. And they have the awareness that what's happening is not my fault or, or I'm learning, I'm discovering.
Yeah.
So that's a really good sign when a child comes to their parents and kind of talks about an incident and it can be very subtle. Like people might make up stories. Like it can be once my son told me, like, I didn't like, one of the people in the school was like, kind of wanted to, touch his hair.
Hmm.
And that was for him a red flag.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't want someone to even like, don't even go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is great.
He's understanding where his boundaries are. Yeah,
exactly. And it's important to know. So this starts, but it doesn't happen just from one conversation.
Yeah.
It's a buildup. And
so what are some of, I guess, the countries that are known worldwide for handling SRE in a, I guess, good way or an optimum way or a healthy way? I don't know what the right adjective for it is.
I know that in the Netherlands and the Scandinavian countries, they do have a comprehensive curriculum, and they even encourage the parents to continue the process at home or to, you know, hold the space for the parents to get the information and the mm-hmm. resources that they need, because that's included when the school helps the parents continue the learning. I know that it does happen. Like in my thesis, when I asked the women, they did learn about it in school from biology and from religion. But again, it really depended on the teachers and depended on the discussion that was happening and the courage of the teacher. Going back to that awkward, can I hold the space for the awkwardness and the discomfort?
Right.
And I remember, like, I had this amazing teacher in high school. She even went into... Because, you know, I remember we were starting to get proposals and, you know, some people were starting to get engaged. And she started to, like, say, listen, these are the red flags. And if, you know, from the engagement days, if, you know, this is coming up, be careful, probe, ask, get curious. And I was like, wow, you know, and she gave the students the chance to critique and to go back to Quran and like, all of the resources that we even have in our religion. But for somehow we're not looking into it or kind of, like, getting curious about what's there.
Okay, interesting. All right, so we need to take a quick break, but we'll be back for more with Rosanna. And I actually want to discuss with you the topic of, as an adult who doesn't necessarily have children, how do you then educate yourself about sex? All right, so we will be right back. This episode is sponsored by Carriage UAE, where you can get everything from food to groceries and even pet supplies. As someone who orders pretty much everything, I pay a lot in delivery charges every month. But now you can sign up for Carriage Black for 20 dirhams a month and get unlimited free deliveries, which saves me a bunch of money so I can order even more stuff. If you haven't tried it out yet, go to your app store and download the Carriage app. Check out the episode description of this podcast for more info. And we're back with Rosanna. So I had a question for you, which was, we were talking before the break about kind of educating yourself as a parent in order to help your child and so on and so forth. But I think there's also a large portion of the population which is considered now like an adult. And they also, I think, need to educate themselves. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's a broad area because it starts with self-discovery. It starts with, again, knowing, who am I and what are my values, and being open to or accepting the fact that, you know, as creatures, you know, mm-hmm. we share this not just like as humans, but even with, you know, animal kingdom, you know,
yeah.
it's part of our make, as mm-hmm. we have other parts in our make, the spirituality side, we have the physical side. So it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's about, again, going with the phases or the different stages that a person goes to.
Right.
I remember in England, in the NHS, their national health system, mm-hmm. which I love, by the way, it's one of the best worldwide. They have a nurse. Her name is her title or her job title is sexual health visitor.
Mm-hmm.
And her role is to just help, you know, in education, confidence. Of course, there it's a different culture, so there are more parameters or different parameters in our culture.
Right.
But just the fact that this person exists and she even helps with cervical screening for, you know, cancer prevention, everything that has to do with health and right. education. And it's a different role than a gynecologist or like a medical, you know, medically trained person, because it's a combo of a counselor, a therapist, with a nursing background.
Oh, okay, I see.
So it's a great combination of again, there is this relationship that this person I can trust, I can ask, they won't judge me.
Mm.
And I wrote about this in my thesis because I feel here we do have, you know, doctors that a person can book. And you know, but again, what are the assumptions? Are doctors, you know, educating adults about when do you start asking or seeking help or finding resources?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it really has to do with their health. And it's not just about what we make up about it. Sometimes we make up when we hear the word, you know, sex education, or we immediately think of, you know, very a certain angle.
Mm-hmm.
But it really encompasses much more. It, you know, for women, it has to do with, you know, menstruation, pregnancy, contraception, all of diseases, illnesses, abnormalities. For men, I don't know, it has, you know, other
aspects.
Exactly. Other aspects. Exactly. Yeah. And only by knowing and so breaking this taboo is very important for adults to initiate the self-management or self-education.
Right.
So you really need to go and make it happen and ask the right people. There are courses right now, like I'm thinking, there are books. I remember there's an Emirati author. Her name is Widad Luta. I don't know if you heard about her.
No.
I remember in my thesis, I mentioned her book because it was in Arabic and it was very comprehensive. And, you know, growing up, like I remember in Mead in Saudi, we had like this section for books by Dr. Ayman al-Husseini, who wrote very funny titles like Shahar Asal Bila Khajal and very kada 80s.
Interesting.
And then there was like, you know, a pause for like 20 years, a pause in where, you know, a young girl, you know, 14-year-old gets, you know, her basic education. Now there's a few, like Niswa, it's an app, it's an Instagram account educating about fertility for women and menstruation. There's even like a menstruation coach right now where women can kind of learn more. But things are changing, but again, it all depends on the person's
drive to actually educate themselves.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Especially if they didn't have this growing up with their parents or with people in their life, or a teacher or a parent that offered a little bit of that.
Yeah, and I think what I love about what you said is it's not just about the sex, it's sex and relations and how sex will affect your relationship with your partner. And that's why you kind of need to educate yourself, whether you're the man or the woman in the relationship. You need to kind of educate yourself so that you know how to show up in that dynamic and
absolutely
what your counterpart needs and what you need and how to manage that situation. Because if like you said, all you're getting is references from movies, or if you're going online and watching, I don't know, pornography, for example, and that's where you're getting your information from, that's going to cause you a lot of problems in the long run. And I think as an adult, even if you haven't educated yourself yet, you then need to take the time to do so. Because like you said, it's not just about the sex. It encompasses emotions, self-esteem, how you think about your body, yourself, your shame.
What's normal? What's not? Exactly. What's real? What's, you know, unreal? And I was I wanted to say something about even in leadership development, we also talk about like a power. There's a triangle in the CTI model in the book The Stake by Henry Kimsey House about you know, how it shows up in group dynamics or in work settings, right? So it's a great tool to understand relations, you know, not just in a personal context, but also in everyday work context or professional context, where it comes up, these, you know, questions or these tensions or dynamics. And then we're like, okay, so how do I tackle this? You know, it's like the elephant in the room.
Right.
So if we don't have the tools or at least the openness to learn about it, it will really take away a lot from evolving and learning and advancing with it's like any other knowledge, really.
Yeah. No, I can see that. And I guess what can be done to improve SRE in the region, in your opinion?
I mean, this is a great just this podcast, when you initially told me, I was like, oh my God, you know, when people just read the title, what will they make up about the episode?
Right.
So clearing assumptions to start with, like, you know, what, as we just talked about, what do we make up about this whole, you know, area or subject area?
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of, again, connecting it with the other fields of study or self-discovery or, you know, all these gray areas.
Right.
So I feel like they're interdependent, these topics,
mm-hmm.
But they're very important because they're happening. We know they're happening. We know that people need help with these topics, and it's okay to ask for exactly what support you need at this phase. I remember in Dubai, there's a center, Human Relations Institute and clinics in Dubai. They started in the early 90s. They're a pioneer, really, in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the courses that I remember was about, you know, marriages and how, like, you know, now there's, like, يعني مو سهل, you know, الواحد
يتزوج?
يتزوج ويكمل متزوج
بالضبط,
you know?
Yeah,
so,
stay married, okay.
And the whole topic of, like, being comfortable again with talking about this with, you know, with my partner, with my husband or with my wife. And the more comfortable or the more couples talk about this amongst one another, the more they can find ways to recover together and to find solutions. Mm. Because, again, it's removing really the shame and it's removing the being alone and feeling like, oh, I'm the problem or he's the problem, or blaming and pointing fingers, to kind of like, okay, so how can we, you know, support each other in this?
Okay, so what you're saying is, if you are married and there is an issue there, or there are needs that are not being met or whatever, there needs to be an honest discussion about it.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, how are you going to be able to move forward?
Absolutely.
Or
and
grow.
Yeah, and yeah. It affects communication as well. Mm. It affects commitment. It affects, again, going back to self-confidence. And so, but again, like, even, like, I remember from even, like, some people don't even want to admit it to themselves.
Yeah.
So sometimes denial becomes more hopeful or more merciful,
yeah,
as an option.
Easier, yeah.
إيوة. إنه خلاص, you know, it is what it is. So, but there is always a way to, يعني دحين, I know in Jeddah, there are two clinics that have, I think, they're in transition to opening or to offering these services with a sexologist, a sex therapist, a gyno, and maybe a nurse as well. I'm not sure, but like having a whole team that works together to tackle, like, you know, because it involves different aspects. It's not very kind of, yeah.
It's not very black and white.
Exactly.
But I guess, how much of the responsibility do you believe lies with the person and the family, and how much responsibility do you believe lies with, I guess, more official channels like governments and schools and things like that?
I think it's maybe like it's like the chicken or the egg. Because when the people are ready and when they're talking about it in schools or parents or, you know, going to the school counselor and it's like, yeah, and, you know, what are you doing about this? And then they will start telling, you know, I'm assuming the Ministry of Education, who will say, ah, there's a lot of demand, or, you know, it's coming up in the meetings, the school counselor's talking about it. So then, you know, it might be informing policies. But now I think education is not just in the academic setting. People are, you know, learning online. There are so many courses online, content that is good, that is offered by professionals in the field. So, yeah, I know, like, Hiba's workshop, word of mouth spilled, and everyone's really talking about the impact of it. And, like, mashallah, she's, like, she has people from 23 Arabic countries.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
I know. And so people will find a way to kind of, like, make an impact. And I like when I go to an organization and people are asking questions like, so, you know, what's okay right now for women? Is it okay for them to, you know, do this or do that? And kind of, like, speaking to the elephant, and they're like, we are changing, we're shifting in many things, and we're more mixing. But it's good to always have that conversation happening where we kind of give people a say of just what you need, you know, what's okay for you. And just giving that space is really good.
I think, and that space needs to encompass everyone's comfort level, because people need to understand that there are people who are going to be very, very uncomfortable, and there are people who are going to be very, very comfortable. And if you're constantly just trying to stay in your zone and force others into your zone, it's not going to go anywhere. And if you're super comfortable with this topic and you're just trying to, like, you know, tug someone behind you who's very uncomfortable, you're just going to get way more resistance. So it's about having the patience to deal with people where they're at and meet them where they're at.
Absolutely. And I love that there are التحرش now in our English.
Say it in English.
It's fine.
We get it in Arabic.
Yeah,
against harassment, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Against harassment. Exactly. Mm. So this really gives, it's a great, it's important to have it, because then I feel safe that there is a law that's going to protect me. And I know what my rights are. I know where my red lines are and what that other person's red lines are. So I think it's good to have, like, as this with the leadership retreat, the program, it was good because it gives everyone the safety to know that, okay, everyone should abide by these rules. So it's also an invitation for other organizations or institutions to kind of apply what they feel, as you said, is fit for that context, for the people. Because if some people are so super comfortable and the others are not, we need someone to come and say, okay, you know, it's good that you're like that and you're like that, but
this is what works for everyone.
Exactly. This is what we see is right.
Yeah.
And that's why now we really need, you know, more coaches and more, you know, facilitators to kind of have these conversations just like this.
Yeah. No, amazing. Okay, so that's all my questions. Now we have just three questions I ask all my guests, which you've told me listen to some episodes, so I think you know what's coming. What is the part of the culture you grew up in that you carry with you always?
I think generosity. Generosity for me is two things. It's one is husn al-dhan, or assuming that the other person is doing the best they can, or assuming that, you know, the other person is trustworthy. And also generosity and being hospitable and giving and kind, and, you know, whether it's food or gifts or opening your home for guests or all that. But I think I like that. I like to assume that we hold a generous assumptions towards others. I don't know, in my family we have that, you know, growing up. And I like to own it. It just makes the world seem like a better place to come from that perspective.
Yeah, no, I love that. And what is the quality you most value in the people you keep around you?
I'm going to say three. Sure. They all start with C.
Okay, cool.
So connection, curiosity, and creativity. And like they also relate to authenticity, but it's really about like connecting to oneself, to others, to the world, to Mother Earth, to the community, and being curious, and the creativity part is kind of like the co-creation part, where we're, you know, where it's an interdependent system. Mm-hmm. And we're all could
where you're creating that relationship together between exactly. you and the person, what goes in that.
Yeah, so people that are dynamic, that have a zest for life, for learning. I'm so big on learning. Like, I'm such a dafura, such a nerd. So I love learning. I feel like it's something that in my relationships, when it's there, you know, I have, since childhood, these people that we always love to share and, you know, send articles to each other. And, oh, my God, did you, you know, hear what's happening here? And, oh, my God, this research is countering the other research. And
oh, wow. Okay. Very cool.
Sometimes too much, but.
All right. And then the last question is, what makes you happy?
The simple things. Of course, my kids. Hmm. Yeah. Reading to them, going in, you know, nature, talking, having these really funny conversations, doing silly things, you know, singing, dancing, istahbil sawa. Yeah, which I think I need to do more of.
Okay. Amazing. So thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. It was really amazing. And thank you for being brave enough to come on and talk about this topic, which I know not everyone is comfortable talking about on the record, so I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Can people find out more about you or any of the projects that you're working on?
So my Instagram is Rosana Albenoui, and I post, you know, most of my work there. Mm-hmm. I think on my Instagram.
Okay, so we'll put that in the episode description so everyone can come and find you and see all the amazing things you're working on.
Thank you.
Especially the Brené Brown workshops, because I'm super excited about those. I'm going to be checking them out myself.
Me too.
All right, guys. So thank you to everyone for listening. As always, I love your comments and messages, so keep them coming. You can reach me on the Millennial Mirrors Instagram or my personal Instagram, both of which are in the episode description. So if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover in future seasons or anything like that, let me know. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Rami, or wherever you're listening. Join me next week for another episode of Millennial Mirrors. This has been a production of Finial Media, and this is Imshad Al-Anezi signing out. Bye, guys.
Bye.